Yes, sir, Mr. President. How are you?
That pretty girl still living with you?
Yes, she just put on the plane. She's going to Georgia.
Doggone. What time did you get up this morning?
4 o'clock. About normal.
What time did you get up?
Well, I got up at 4, but I went back to bed.
You oughtn't to get up that time.
I got up at 4.
You're the only one president. We got 100 senators looking for to get up at 4.
Herman, I called you about our friend Bennett down in the Dominican Republic. He is just raising hell, wanting to get out of there. He's got an assignment which is they regard very well in the Foreign Service. I believe it's to Portugal, and it's a very desirable post. I have not let him go out because I didn't want anybody to interpret that he had made any mistakes of judgment or done anything that he shouldn't have done, because I don't think he has, and I support him 1,000%. But every time I hear from him, he's begging and pleading, and I don't want to be cruel and I don't want to be vicious about it. He doesn't get along with the left-wingers down there, and they have more strength in the Senate than we do, because they raise more hell all the time. And Fulbright and New York Times.
Talking, but when the chip's down, they don't get many votes.
That's right.
Know, Mr. President.
That's right. But New York Times and the Herald Tribune, this Washington Post, raising hell all the time. So I just, by myself, main strength and awkwardness, I've turned down Tom Mann, and I've turned down Dean Rusk, and I've turned down Tap Bennett. And finally, they got old man Bunker coming in. The last two trips he's made in, he says that that he thinks it's going to affect Bennett's general perspective on life, that he's getting to be where he's kind of got a fixation on it, and he wants to move out of there. They wanted me to put a man named Kremen, who is a charge d'affaires, in as ambassador, and I looked him over, and I didn't think that he had the experience and the qualifications. So I just told him that I would make Bunker stay there. He had been in he's a former big businessman, had retired, but had been an outstanding ambassador in many countries, and he's there with the OAS, and we would let Kremen be the day-to-day processor, but we'd let matters of judgment be left up to Bennett as long as he's there, and then the other fellow when he left. He came back up this week, Bunker did, and said that Bennett wanted to leave, and this post was vacant, and had been vacant some time, and he thought we ought to, and they're getting ready to have elections, and that if Bennett's there in the elections, he'll be an issue in the elections, and he doesn't want to be, and that he would like for me to take action. And I said, well, I'm just not going to do it as long as anybody. I don't care what Bennett thinks. I've got to, he may need a guardian. And I've been guardianing now for about 6 months because these folks yelped a little bit. But I'm not going to do it until they quit attacking him, and until the left-wingers down there quit bellyaching about it. And I saw an FBI report the other night where they said that they wouldn't have anything to do with him, and they wouldn't see him, and they wouldn't listen to the American ambassador. And I said, whoever's American ambassador, he represents, he's a symbol of this country, and I expect him to respect him. And I'm not going to bring him out of there until he sits down with Bosch, and Bosch receives him and talks to him, and he tells Bosch what he thinks about that country and what ought to be done about it. So Bunker said, well, all right, he'd see what could be done about that. This morning, I got a cable from Bosch, I mean from Bunker, saying that Ambassador Bennett and I had an hour's very frank and friendly conversation yesterday with Bosch. We covered the situation as it affects the climate, emphasized the interest of the U.S. government, the OAS, for elections, and adhering to the June 1st date, and stressing the improved climate here. We emphasized the contribution the OAS is prepared to make through the campaign period and election, the need for political parties to all participate. Bosch agreed that the climate here has improved considerably. He expressed his doubt that progress is sufficient to hold elections on June the 1st. Nevertheless, he held the options open. We agreed to maintain contact, and we all left in a very cordial atmosphere. I believe, therefore, that the time has now come and is appropriate to take the other steps we discussed last week. So that's at 8:25 a.m. So I am going to announce sometime in the next short time, maybe 11 o'clock or 4, whenever, after I talk to Dick, that I'm going to name Bennett to this other post. And, of course, I'm going to deny that there's any connection with because there's not, as far as I'm concerned, with the Dominican Republic thing. And, of course, our position is that he had a very fine period of service, and it's promotion, and it is a much more desired and higher-rated post than the one that he's got. I thought before I did this, I better give you all the background you could, because I would imagine that the Morrises and the New York Times and Bill Fulbright will be up saying that what they usually say. Now, the Soviet Union has a hell of a campaign on. They are seeing, I guess, 10 senators a day on various phases of Vietnam policy. They're the 10 that you would expect them to be seeing. I don't want to get into
McCarthy. I'm amazed that any senator even conferring with them about a matter of that kind.
Well, they do. They do. And they come up with the recommendations, and the government has to come around and act on them in a matter of 3 or 4 months after they raise the hell. They've got in motion now. They're giving a big party for the administrative assistants, and they're selecting select administrative assistants. They're starting out with 50 and select people. But, for instance, when a pause starts, like this last pause we had in bombing for 30 days, that originates with a fellow like Fulbright, who eats dinner out there and stays till 1 o'clock, and the ambassador urges him to get me to have a pause, because if we do for 12 days, they can go in and bring us to the negotiating table. So he comes by and urges that. And 30 days later, he's followed by Mansfield. 2 weeks later, he's followed by Morris. 3 weeks later, he's followed by Bobby Kennedy. Then pretty soon, Steve Young gets up, and we see where he had a visit, and then he makes a speech on the same subject. Then Bundy in my shop, who's gone now, but he's invited to lunch. And they have a concerted line all in the same direction. Then when you do it, why, you do it for, they say 12, 20 days, you do it 37 days, then they say, well, you ought to never resume, and they try to stop you from resuming. And they can't get the job done. It's idealism. I think they really tried to bring an oil around, but they're frantic with the Chinese. And the Chinese just tell them to go straight to hell. And the Chinese in Hanoi, we just had a man come in from there yesterday who had spent several days in Hanoi and had talked to all of them that's worth talking to. And they just tell him that they just one thing they're going to have, and that's victory, and that they're winning. And they honestly believe that they're just winning to beat the band.
I think they're winning on the political front here in Washington. Oh,
yeah.
The same way they defeated the French.
That's exactly right.
They defeated them in Paris.
That's right.
Substantially, the
battle
of Dien Phien Phu was incidental. Mr. President, I think these pauses, of course, just give them an opportunity to regroup forces and bring in more troops and more material, more equipment, and only make them stronger where they can kill more Americans faster, is my thinking about it.
Well, there's some basis for that. There's some offsetting things, too, that we don't stress or feed to this crowd. But as a sample, both Wheeler and Taylor went along with the pause because Westmoreland was asking for firepower on the Ho Chi Minh Trail at that point that he had to have. And he had weather where it could be used. In the north, 80% of the time, you couldn't see a target, and the other 20% you couldn't hit it. And we diverted the same planes to the Ho Chi Minh Trail every day with the same bomb power, And as a result, Westmoreland told me that we got much better results. We got 155 secondary explosions of things they were bringing down, ammunition and stuff down this trail. And we haven't really been back in business since then, because I noticed last night of 300 that we got flown, I only got 100, and most of them didn't get the target on account of weather. So we didn't lose. We want to make it, we don't want to admit all these things and point them up, because we want proper credit for the pause with the rest of the civilized world.
It might have been wise,
but
from a national and political standpoint.
Well, Taylor and Wheeler and the other men said if you're going to have to do it sometime, the best time to do it's when you can't drop them anyway.
Yes. Of course, you know my views about Tap Bennett. I was in college with him. I've known him for more than 30 years. He's able. He's sincere. He's forthright. He's intelligent. He believes in the flag and the country.
That's right.
Tries to protect our interest, and of course, I agree with you that the overall, he's sort of like a soldier in the military. He needs to be assigned wherever his service is most valuable. I can understand why he'd want to be in Lisbon and prefer that. I certainly would were I in his shoes. If you see fit to assign him there, of course, it pleased me very greatly.
Well, that's what we're going to do, but I want you to know the background, and what I'm saying to you about what the Soviets are doing between me and you, but it's something that...
I don't think they've got around to inviting my folks here.
No.
If they do, they won't be there.
No, but it distresses me. Doesn't it distress you?
It does indeed. In fact, I'm utterly amazed that any members of the Senate and their associates would be going to the Soviet embassy conferring about foreign policy of the United States. Because insofar as I'm concerned, they want to eat us up, and I don't want to be.
Well, a night before Dean Rusk testified, the chairman of the committee was there at 1 o'clock.
Well, of course, that doesn't surprise me. You and I both know him.
But I thought Dean Rusk took pretty good care of himself.
I thought he did a superb job, Mr. President. I happened to be in Lovejoy when he was testifying. That was during our Lincoln Day recess. And I sat by my television all day long, and I thought he did a splendid job. I saw him somewhere the other evening in the social, well, it was at the White House. I saw him at the White House, and Betty and I both went up to express our commendation for the superb job that he did. I thought he made by far the best witness that's appeared before the committee.
What's happening to Dick and the governor? Is
Dick
the governor going to run?
And the governor is threatening to run. The polls show Russell Paul in the lead. He'll sustain that lead. I don't know whether the governor hopes that he can frighten Dick out or what the situation is. He's telling some of his very close associates that while he doesn't think he can win, that he thinks he can get 35-40% of the vote, thinks that'll make him a political factor, a powerful factor in the state from now on. It's a strange theory. And if his name was John Smith, and he had never been in politics, that may be true. But a man who was elected governor by a substantial majority and still retains a reservoir of substantial goodwill in the state that runs and gets defeated by 200,000 majority, that's not going to enhance his prestige at all. I've got a thought in that connection, Mr. President. Why don't you call him up and offer him one of these 5th District judgeships?
I offered him everything, including the cabinet, when he was here.
He turned it down.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do it that way, but I just told him that I needed him, and that I didn't know how long Russell would be there, but he could be in and out of Georgia, and he could practically write his own ticket if he wanted to come to the Senate later or anything else later, and I offered him the job I gave Farris Bryant, Buford Ellington had. Told him he'd sit in the cabinet, sit the Security Council. I told him he could write his ticket on anything else. Told him there were some judgeships open. Told him that if he wants something down there with the circuit or District of Columbia or any other thing, that he was young and able and so on and so forth. He sort of said to me, I don't feel liberty to quote him, and I don't want you to repeat it, but he said the fact to me just what he said to you there, which was rather surprising to me. He said that he thought he'd get a lot more votes than anybody thought he'd get. He said that he thought that people were underestimating, and he thought they were overestimating. Senator Russell and his physical condition and the campaign he'd put on. And he thought as it got hotter and harder that it would reflect itself that he didn't dislike Senator Russell, that he respected him and liked him. But he said that I have a feeling, and this is in my gut, and I can't get it out. Said, I appreciate what you've said, but I have a feeling it's kind of a family passing things on. And said, I don't want something to happen to the senator and then the governor be part of the senator's family. And then I